Hello, everyone, and welcome back to SCADcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm Matt Nickley. As the sun sets on summer and cooler winds start to approach, students everywhere are settling back into the classroom for the new academic year. The setting won't be the same for every student, but whether they're virtual or in person, every pupil is eager, ready, and full of curiosity. At SCAD, we're in the midst of welcoming our new students into their university home as our current students reunite and dive into the fall with refreshed enthusiasm. Cheering on every new SCAD student are 46,000 alumni, including today's special guest, painting alumnus Jose Parla. It's always amazing to see students go from first years to launching their careers and achieving professional dreams. As one of his generation's finest painters, Parla's reached triumphant heights since his years at SCAD. Urban realism and the abstract meet on Parla's canvases to create iconic and mesmerizing sights. From his Diary of Brooklyn in the Barclays Center, to One Union of the Senses in One World Trade Center, to his current exhibition, It's Yours, at the Bronx Museum of the Arts, Parla is actively creating American classics seen by hundreds of thousands. Today's interview comes from 2016, when many of our incoming first-year students were beginning high school and Parla was preparing for an exhibition at Art Basel in Miami. Every SCAD alum has a lesson to share, and every student is a future mentor themselves. As we say here at SCAD, once a bee, always a bee. From SCADcast, this is On Creativity, a conversation between Paula Wallace and Jose Parla.
So Jose, I just saw you at the screening of your film at the SCAD Museum of Art. Tell me about making this beautiful film that I just saw.
Well, making this film, first, it's my first directorial debut. I've co-directed one film before that, and I've worked on experimental films here and there. But this was special to me because it's tied to the mural at the World Trade Center, at One World Trade Center, which is really special. It's a huge honor to be invited to have the main entrance at the building, which always felt not only like an honor, but a major responsibility. Out of the project, I've always loved to do any kind of documentation. So whenever there's a project going on, no matter what it is, my brother and I, we've been taking photos for years. And this was no different, but we wanted to really scale it up. So we contacted a really dear friend of ours who's a cinematographer, Max Goldman, who's incredible. And we said, you know, we want to get this really vast painting on film. So we went with an anamorphic lens and, we wanted it to be a massive landscape. And the idea was to make a sort of experimental abstract documentary of the making of the painting, and that the film would be a mirror, not necessarily something separate from the painting. They're sort of twins. And I got the idea at the Clark Museum in Massachusetts, seeing a Van Gogh in nature exhibition. And just, I kept thinking about sort of the reflections of the color in nature in his paintings. And I had already started the painting, but I had not started the film. So I thought, I really want to make something that brings together the synergy of New York City and make the film a love letter to New Yorkers. And not only New Yorkers, but visitors as well. Because the site is really an international site, and although it's a complex place now, it's still a place that people will go and reflect for generations to come. And I wanted to bring some like seriously good vibes in there, and so all the colors, everything's inspired by having multiplicity and having a lot of diversity, and that is reflective of New York, of the people, of its cultures, the languages, and all of the sort of textures that that I've witnessed in New York as a signifier of unity. And that's the title, One Union of the Senses, which came to me while painting. in you know, this vast space of color while I was on ladders. I would jump and, you know,
I saw that. That is wild.
Thank you. Yeah.
And so I was, when I was imagining you jumping, I thought maybe you had mattresses or something to jump on, but you were literally mark making with your body.
Yeah. Yeah, it's it was on impulse. I felt this kind of like synesthesia going through me. And, you know, I grew up dancing as well. So I bring a lot of that into the painting, that kind of energy. And I wanted to do long strokes and gestures. And the only way to do it was to jump from the 12-foot ladder while keeping the brush on the surface. And that way you could get a long, smooth line. But it's interesting because you're connecting your eye to where you're gonna land before you even do it, and it's happening very instinctual. And that sort of instinct I bring into my work in many ways, and I brought into the film because I didn't want it to feel like a film. I wanted it to feel that you could understand, the viewer could understand the pace of how I paint. Mm-hmm. And so it was very reflective of the layering process, all the transparencies, which actually is something that I learned here at SCAD because one of my painting professors here, a wonderful woman by the name of Ria Mengiva, she taught illustration to acrylic painting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But she taught acrylic painting like oil painting. Yeah. So it wasn't limited in any way. And it was really about something very important that she said was that your surface to your painting must have a history of its own. Not only the imagined history or, you know, your conceptual history, but physical history on the canvas. And I learned how to paint in transparencies and in sort of planes here through her. And so I always brought that not only into the painting, but also now into this filmmaking, because I filmed a lot through glass. And you see that we filmed on, we filmed from one side of the glass while paint was running down the glass, or from above and the paint would fall on top. And that was on the other side while the camera was filming me drawing. And all of that was to sort of put together the idea that it was the point of view of the painting that was going throughout the five boroughs of New York, mm-hmm. and that it was watching me. So the painting came to life.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I loved the bags floating, and the dancing was very impressive in the whole whole working. I have had a chance to see your work, and it's just so immersive in the lobby there. So to have the film also, as you said, as kind of a twin project, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's sort of a gift. One of the questions that was asked earlier at the Q&A was, how do you make money from a film like this? And I explained that sometimes you do projects and there's no money to be made from it. It's you're just giving back, and it's a different model, you know, and art doesn't always have to be about money, although it's important to do, you know, make a living from it. And I guess, you know, going back to when I was a student, you don't necessarily know how you're going to make a living, you know. And when I was here, I waited tables, and I worked at a music shop, and I was a baker, and I washed dishes. I had like four jobs while I attended SCAD. And I learned a lot. And when you start getting opportunities to work as an artist, whether I was doing illustration or graphic design at first, before the galleries, you know, you start to understand a little bit of like the value that comes with what comes out of your hands. And it takes years. And I think a lot of times students don't necessarily understand that. And for a reason, you have to accrue those, you know, experiences and mold and shape a lot of what you're going to do through those experiences that you still don't know what they will add up to, right?
Can you think of a breakthrough moment in your career when I remember we had an exhibition, I believe, with your work and Wendy White's work. And then I've noticed so many other important commissions and work that you've gained. I mean, do you feel like there was a breakthrough moment?
There's been a few. There's always like stages. One of the first breakthrough moments, I had moved to New York in 1997. And started doing underground sort of DIY shows. And like I was saying, like I've been to Japan and a few places, but they were relatively under the radar. Although there was a little, you know, sort of breakthrough here and there. But at one point in 2002, after the September 11th attacks, myself and two other artists, Lee Quiñones and Ramon Yang, were invited by a French art collector and designer, and Agnes B, to do a three-person show that she curated herself in New York. She had not been to New York previous to 2002 in 10 years. And when she came and she met a bunch of like the New York underground, sort of like downtown artists, she was really enamored and she was, you know, wanting to do more things. At that point, she hosted this incredible exhibition that sort of, at that time, put me and my friends in the forefront of what was going on downtown. And the following year, she invited 21 New York artists to Paris to exhibit. And I mean, the names in that list, now everyone's been, you know, from Ryan McGinley to Dash Know, who passed away not too long ago, Dan Cullen, David Ellis, who actually did projects here with SCAD as well. It's a group of artists that sort of took off. And that felt like a breakthrough moment because she had the eye to recognize a group of sort of crazy downtown lost souls that were searching for a way to sort of come out into the scene. And it felt like it was connected to that New York energy that was sort of, you could see its connection to even, you know, Jean-Michel Basquiat and Keith Haring and Andy Warhol, because it was that similar sort of scene and vibrancy. That was a big breakthrough moment. And then stages later, you know, when I did the project at Brooklyn Academy of Music, that introduced me to the project at the Barclays Center, which then the major breakthrough moment really has been at One World Trade Center, and with a lot of exhibitions in between. But
amazing, just amazing. And your whole story is so amazing. What influences would you say are most important in your work?
Well, in my work, you know, even before I came to SCAD, I had been doing art as a kid in the streets for a very long time. The 1980s were heavily charged and influenced by the hip-hop culture, breakdancing, and what later became known as graffiti, which was interesting because it was cemented, it was really cemented art in urban culture. And us as practitioners took it very seriously, and it almost felt like we were part of a tribe and there were codes. The codes were very loose, but we understood, when I say we as writers, we understood it's sort of in and outs and how we collected our sketchbooks and took photographs and kept albums. And so there was a whole culture that went along.
You were recording your work.
Recording it specifically because it's ephemeral in nature. It just disappears. It got erased. And so it was very serious. But that is exactly what led me to SCAD, because I was sort of in survival mode for many years. Miami in the 1980s was a very tough town. My neighborhood was a pretty violent place. And as an artist, you were kind of an outcast. People didn't understand what that was, because there was the idea that if you were an artist, you were going to be broke. And the materiality of it didn't make sense to most people. And so being that outcast at the same time kind of kept you safe. Like I remember a story, like, you know, being surrounded by a gang. Me and my friends were at a table at a park, where everyone would normally go and play basketball or baseball or something. We would go and draw, and we had our sketchbooks and our markers and everything. And this local gang whose territory we were in, with no idea, they basically came to beat us up. But when they came and they saw that we were drawing and painting, the leader, the more mature one, knew enough to leave us alone and stop the other guys from sort of beating us up. And they were like, "You guys want to come and draw here? You can do that."
Fantastic.
You're allowed to go. So the art saved us along the way in many places. And it saved me a second time when I was awarded the Scholastic Art Awards that led to the Francis McCumman Scholarship that brought me to SCAD, which changed my life. Because imagine 1980s Miami leading into 89 and 90 Savannah, Georgia. Very different.
Yes.
Very peaceful place here. It's an art school. It made me focus. So it really just changed my life to be able to have the education and catapult into what I was to do.
Do you consider, I think about walls when I think about your work, and that other people's walls, and you're creating your own walls now with your work, and you were describing what you're planning on doing at the Bacardi Center. So I'm like throwing in a lot of things, ideas in here, but what do you think about the whole concept of walls?
Well, you know, I grew up painting on walls, and not only painting on them, but recording them and photographing them. And I would also enjoy photographing the ones that look like the most neglected walls, the walls that had maybe political writing or that they were falling apart, and you could see the layers of its colors sort of torn and with posters ripped. And I really liked that because it really spoke to me about humanity on a different level.
And you included that in your film too.
And that's been the backbone of my work. It's like the palimpsest of society in a sense, like sort of a psychogeographical framework of fragments throughout different cities that I saw having a linear storyline that I could draw inspiration from. And so walls have always been a part of the first point of departure for inspiration for my work. And that's been able to transpire into paintings, but also recently in sculptural paintings, which are fragments that stand on their own, which was a project that I titled Segmented Realities that actually has walls from all over different cities that I've spent time in, including a wall in Savannah, which is Whitaker and Whitaker Street. And so they're always locations, and the locations deal with the psychogeography of the place and also imagine stories that I try to interpret from different cities. Mm-hmm. And the project in Miami deals with the title Roots, which connects in an interesting way. First, SCAD inviting me to work with Young Arts, National Young Arts Foundation, and that it was the Bacardi Building originally resonates with me because my grandfather had been sponsored in 1913 to do one of the first flights in the world, and it was sponsored by Bacardi. So it's just like a nice way to connect back to something personal.
Yes.
And that Rolls-Royce is sponsoring it is really special too, because it sort of goes to the tradition of handmade and, you know, craft. And it's just really, I feel like there's like a really good serendipity happening with this project. And that jewel box of a building in the Young Arts Foundation is special because architecturally it's so unique.
It
poses a challenge. I had to sort of work with the interior to transform it into something that doesn't lose the architecture altogether and respect some of the stained glass showing through, and that the paintings could sort of have a dialogue with that. Mm-hmm. So it'll be really interesting once it gets, you know, to come through.
When we were thinking about that building, we thought of you because your work is so strong that it does stand on its own. And the amazing jewel box of that building, the stained glass, is kind of iconic, and I think that what you're proposing sounds amazing. I can't wait to see it. In fact, we're creating a curriculum guide for teachers and for students to use when they come and see your work there. Is there a certain message, or what message would you suggest that we convey through that curriculum guide?
Well, you know, as a native Miamian, to me it'll be a homecoming show, really. I haven't exhibited in a scale that big since 2006.
Cool.
So it'll be really nice. The overall message, I mean, as a teacher in a way, I feel that my job is constantly to remind young people that it takes a lot of effort, a lot of patience, and a lot of hard work and years to sort of cement yourself in the arts and develop your own style, and that through that hard work you can sort of shape your path in your way. And I think that'll be the main message. It's that it's not going to come easy. I mean, it can for some people. I have certainly had to improvise a lot of things and navigate certain things that were obstacles, but sometimes use them in my benefit. And so it really is about sort of the constructive layers that have made my work, being able to expose that in a way that it's visible for people to understand that they can apply some of those same, I guess, not techniques, but some of those same values into whatever they want to do, whether they want to sing or dance or act or be an architect.
Yeah.
You know, there's a sort of like unwritten rules of dedication and devotion that you can put into your work to lead you to have some success. And that's my message.
Fantastic. Well, in creating street art, is there a moment that you remember?
Sure. You know, it happened so early for me. I was born in Miami, but at the age of one, my family moved to Puerto Rico. And we returned to Miami, basically 1982. And I was going through culture shock, learning English. I didn't speak the language. New city, you know, Puerto Rico's insular. In Miami, you had, you know, Jamaican neighborhood. You had African-American, Cuban, Colombian. So you were adapting. And the one thing that I felt was a glue that united kids of all backgrounds was hip hop culture. It was about all of us. It was about sort of learning the techniques of the dancing, or, you know, graffiti became a language that was so abstract and camouflaged that it was one unified language. So it wasn't it didn't separate us. It unified us.
Yes.
And there was a natural draw to it. There was, I thought it was a cool thing, but also we were kind of nerds, really, because we were really into it and figuring it out. Well,
would you consider it a form of calligraphy?
It is. It's a complete form of calligraphy. It had its code with interlocking letters that you would share between you and your friends' styles and ideas. And they were being handed down and passed down to a sort of rites of passage that doesn't really exist anymore. And that made it really intriguing, because if you were young, And you always had a mentor who would teach you styles. And you would eventually teach the younger person style. And so it was this rites of passage that sort of escalated down and trickled down. And you kind of had a responsibility to teach that style to someone else. And it was all unspoken rules, but we all knew that that's the way it functioned. And that's why I said earlier that it felt like we were part of a tribe. There was there were conflicts, because you were in a sort of underground culture that was competitive. So you wanted to outdo the next person for better style. And you could draw better, or you can color better. And everyone was a master of something. And we were all very young. I started at the age of 10. So it really changed my life. I sort of understood American culture through that telescope. And I like differently than understanding it through, let's say, football or baseball. I understood it through an underground culture that unified all these kids from all over. 1982, you got to remember that at 1980 was the Mariel boat lift. There were 300,000 Cubans coming in. And by 1985, the Sandinista Wars were happening in Nicaragua. So you had kids from South, you know, Latin America, South America, Colombians, Venezuelans. There was a really big melting pot happening in Miami. So that there was something unifying us was interesting. And we were looking to New York and Philadelphia and all the bigger, you know, you know, East Coast cities for identity and style. And that became, to me, something very American. And to answer your question about calligraphy, I always imagined, if we were to look back, you know, 500 years from now, 1,000 years from now, at this point in history where a certain style of calligraphy came out of the United States, you know, compared to, like, let's say English calligraphy, old English, or Arabic calligraphy, or Japanese calligraphy that's very identifiable to those countries. If we were to look back and see that there's an American calligraphy, it would probably have been born out of the ghettos through this so-called graffiti style, because there was nothing else in the United States like it, or in the world like it. It's very American. It is very American, and now even more so, because after, for example, there was a book that was published called Subway Art by Martha Cooper and Henry Chalfant. That book went all over the world. And so that culture spread as far as Tanzania to South Africa to, you know, Vancouver and all over the world. And it's an American sort of trademark.
So interesting. So you've lived in so many different places, and now in New York. What does home mean to you?
I mean, I guess wherever I lay my hat is my home, kind of thing. But New York is really home. I've been there longer than anywhere else in my life. But somehow, wherever my friends are, where I've developed those relationships, I'm very easy to slide in and feel really relaxed and at home in a lot of places.
Well, I hope you feel at home at SCAD.
I do feel at home at SCAD. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Jose, I think you've exhibited before during the Art Basel Miami Beach. The first week in December in Miami has become a global fest for art and design. What are your impressions?
Well, you know, being that it's my original hometown and seeing how much it's changed and how much the fair has changed the city, I mean, it's ignited new museums, it's ignited, you know, contemporary collections. There's like the Miami sort of model, they call it now, right? And that's really interesting to me because I've seen that change. And it's really exciting because it shows the power of art. It shows how much art can change a city. I mean, you've done that with Savannah. SCAD has changed the city and transformed it, always for the better and more positive. So to have that sort of magnetism, draw people from all over the world and be a part of it, and have a little bit of time during that major platform and to be on stage like that, it's fantastic for any artist, whether it's at the fair or to have a project like what we're doing, which is very specific, site specific. It's great. I think it's really truly magical happening.
I can't wait to see your work, Roots in Miami. First week in Miami is a fest of all great proportions in Miami. So it should be quite an event.
Well, I'm very happy and very lucky to have that platform. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Of course.
I hope you enjoyed hearing from Jose Parla. You can view selections of Parla's work, watch videos, and keep up with his current exhibitions at joseparla.com. I'm also happy to announce that the SCAD Museum of Art in Savannah and the SCAD Fash Museum of Fashion and Film in Atlanta have both officially reopened. Check their websites for more information on current and upcoming exhibitions. This episode marks the end of our third season. And on behalf of the entire On Creativity team, I thank you so much for your continued listenership and enthusiasm for the arts. For those who are new to the series, welcome, and be sure to look back through our previous seasons and enjoy past interviews. Listen to experts from disciplines you might have less experience with, because you never know what you'll learn. I'm always talking to people about Carlton Varney for that very reason. I still find myself going back and listening to that conversation and pulling out little nuggets that's helping my interiors look better than ever. Still not quite there though yet, so I'll be listening to it again soon. And over the break, be sure to keep an eye on the Guests and Gusto events page at scad.edu to find out about and participate in upcoming interviews and virtual artist visits. Our fall calendar is filling up fast, and I can't wait to share with you everything we have planned. SCADcast and On Creativity is executive produced by SCAD president and founder Paula Wallace, with original music by SCAD alumnus George Lovett. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and stay active. This is SCADcast, signing off for now.